Weather today, highs of 8 degrees centigrade, lows of 5 degrees centigrade. It's going to be dry, rather cloudy at times, but there will be some bright or sunny spells.
This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
You may think you want to stay there to the end with the love that you want to cling on to, but maybe you're just interested in being cuffed to them. To address this and provide some very healthy advice for dating and the Christmas season and gifts and so on, we're delighted to be able to welcome ace sociologist extraordinaire, the legendary Dr. Jessica Carbino. Good morning, Jessica. How are you?
Good morning, Alex. Thank you so much for having me.
A genuine delight. And this is one of those periods where you think, well, should we avoid Tinder? Should we work on the whole... Ben, when you sort of saw this particular news story, you thought, what were your initial thoughts?
It's quite interesting, I think, actually. Quite an interesting experiment. I didn't realise the word cuffing existed, to be honest.
Cuffing has brought a new level of equality to the programme, Jessica. And would you like to just define from your own perspective, what does cuffing effectively mean?
Well, Alex, it's so funny. I live in Los Angeles where it's very warm and temperate. So the term cuffing has been completely and totally lost on me, and I didn't actually know what it was until I arrived in London. But I've been talking to so many people, and essentially, from what I understand, cuffing is where individuals decide that for the winter that they want to find a partner to sort of hibernate with before the Christmas season and through the winter, and then after the winter, when things get warmer and people go on holiday and are on vacation, they want to be single again.
See, that was, I think it was a 50 Shades of Grey moment. Clearly, I was completely wrong. just don't go there.
Two different things.
We see that this analysis of user activity on Tinder reveals that tomorrow is expected to become the busiest day in history. That's the 25th, of course, of the month of November. For matches in the UK, this run-up to Christmas, seeing a surge in would-be daters, swiping right for one person, driven by a whole range of things in online dating. Do you think people get too obsessed, Jessica, with sort of finding their ideal perfect other, and that can only end in tears?
I think that people during the holiday season really want to figure out how they can find a partner. We're embedded in communities, our families, our friends. We see people who are coupled and people who are partnered. So it makes a lot of sense that during this period of time, beginning with November 25th, that we'd see a huge increase, in fact, 10% increase in activity on Tinder. And this persists throughout the month of December and then really continues after New Year's, where people have made these meaningful resolutions to try to find somebody, and then goes up to Valentine's Day when people are really looking to have a Valentine.
Sally, thoughts from yourself on this whole phenomenon?
It's all a bit alien to me, Alex. No, I'd never heard of cuffing before, I have to say. I have heard of Tinder, and obviously, and I think, you know, it works very well for lots of people. So, you know, but the cuffing thing, I'm not sure about.
Well, Jessica, clearly your dissertation, Dating in the 21st Century, your doctoral study from that point of view, kind of adds this question. I mean, there was I thinking Sleepless in Seattle was probably the sort of high spot, but that's way back in the 20th century. What are your top tips in terms of if you're into avoiding an awkward Christmas moment? Do you purchase a gift? Do you not purchase a gift? When is it appropriate to actually say, we're going off for the full all spa treatment? What's the? It's all very confusing, or can be, presumably.
Of course, gift giving can be such an awkward activity because we're really trying with gifts to signal that we're establishing a relationship and what that relationship actually means. So you don't want to have a mismatch between one person giving a gift that's really serious and expensive and another person giving a gift that's more light and fun. So I always tell people to think about the length of time that they've been dating as well as how serious the relationship is, and then make a decision about what type of gift to give accordingly. So if you've just started out dating, let's say you've been dating for like a month, less than five dates, I tell people that they should definitely give somebody something that's very light, if anything at all. I would really recommend that if you really just started dating, give somebody a card or a small token of affection that signals that you're interested in getting to know them better, but still keeps it light and fun, because you don't necessarily know what the other person thinks about you at that point or where their relationship is going to go.
Ben, thoughts from yourself?
Well, I think that might be quite a difficult situation. You can make it quite awkward if obviously the other person hasn't decided to get the other person something, or a bit undecided, or one gets a sort of a bigger or more expensive present than the other person, and I think that kind of opens it up to sort of making it a bit of a very awkward situation.
Jessica, is this a kind of challenging etiquette? I mean, Ben is 20, 21?
20.
20,
yeah.
20 years of age. I don't know, are you going through this trauma at present? You don't have to show.
No.
That's definitely so, but for somebody who might be Ben's age from that point of view, would you say just take it easy, just ease back? That's the important thing. Go slowly. That's the important thing.
Yes, I think it's important to go very slowly. We know that most people don't spend more than £85 on a gift on average. So we really would want to be mindful of that and think about that when trying to actually buy a gift. So it's really inappropriate to lavish somebody with a massive gift if you just started dating. So I always recommend to make the gift something be thoughtful that the person actually cares about, that you are actually listening to them and your gift signals that. But at the same time, make sure it's light and fun so that you don't have this awkward situation that Ben's talking about where there's this huge mismatch in terms of gift giving.
Sally, it's the food and gift fair at Lincoln tomorrow. I suspect that there are heaps of opportunities here to put into practice what Jessica's just been sharing with us. What kind of things spring to your mind in terms of, in the £85 or thereabouts zone?
Well, £85, that's very generous, isn't it? Everything. Jewellery, scented candles, those sort of things, something for the home, lots and lots of things.
Scented candles, Jessica? Would that be a sort of line which you think would be a possible, or would that be, again, too possibly phallic symbolised?
Well, I don't know about the phallic symbolisation, but I think that you should give somebody scented candles if they like scented candles. I think that you should give people gifts that you think they would like. That's why people give a gift, to show that they care about somebody and that they're interested in what the other person's interested in.
Jessica, I think you've opened our eyes in a way that only an American on Thanksgiving Day can do, which is wonderful for them. And indeed, happy Thanksgiving to your good self.
Oh, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Exactly. So, two final questions for your good self. Well, actually, three. First of all, where can people go to find out further information? Is it Jessica to go to the Tinder website and they'll be able to decode some of your own sage advice as well?
Sure, they can absolutely go to our Tinder website, but they can also go to the App Store and download the Tinder app.
Well, that's sensational. Dating in the trade. Extraordinary line. So, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us, Dr. Jessica Carbino? Has it been okay for you?
I've had a wonderful time talking with you.
So, the next critical question is, will you be kind enough to return in the not-too-distant future? And who knows, maybe even become one of our regular transatlantic correspondents. Will you return?
That would be great. I would like nothing more.
A round of applause for Dr. Jessica Carbino, please. In-house sociologist for Tinder. And I think that's kind of answered a few questions, maybe opened up a few others, but at least we know what cuffing is. From Tinder advice, and quite rightly so as well, to some top tips to ensure you're not left disappointed this Black Friday with an ace actor, general all-round wonderful gaming YouTube star. He's legendary, he is extraordinary, he's the amazing James Buckley. Good morning, James, how are you?
I'm a bit blown away by that introduction. Oh, thank you ever so much. That is the kindest thing anyone has ever said to me.
Oh,
I love that. Well, I'm reveling in that. That was beautiful. Thank you.
We'll make sure the podcast is downloadable very soon, so you can play it as often as you wish. Anyway, let's move on to the facts and figures of this particular item. Last year, Black Friday topped £3 billion, and it's looking as though 2016 will beat that. Across the UK, millions of folk will be getting even more into the Christmas spirit as Black Friday lands and so on. But it's the old influence factor. We were talking yesterday with some of our contributors on the show, and people are more and more being influenced by YouTube and bloggers and folks such as yourself, James. I mean, it's the awesome responsibility of saying, which way are we going to go? Where are we going to what are we going to purchase?
Well, what's great about YouTubers is that they don't actually have that responsibility. What they do is talk about their opinions and talk about things that they're passionate about, and that's sort of what people look for, I think. I think in this sort of current climate, the whole world is saying, we just want some people to trust. And I think that's why a lot of people are now looking at YouTube for their entertainment and for, you know, inevitably to be influenced by it.
Yeah, James, if you actually use that in the 2020 American presidential elections, we just want some people we can trust, I'm sure you'll be elected. Just change nationality and we will.
That's the sort of vibe at the moment that's going around. I don't know about you, but I sort of don't know where to look at the moment, yeah.
Ben, you were quite excited when we announced that James was joining us on the programme, so
yeah,
take it away, please.
I'm a huge In Between Us fan, James, so it's a pleasure to be able to speak to you, actually.
Oh, no, the pleasure is all mine.
Oh, this is good. We need to have one again.
Come on.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the whole trust situation, do you think it's because a lot of people sort of rely on people closer to their age group and sort of closer, similar sort of traits to themselves rather than mainstream media? They kind of believe in a bit more in the people that are telling the true facts, essentially.
I definitely see that. So, you know, my story is that I'm a passionate gamer. I love video games. And also, you could probably tell from my job, I like creating content, creating videos and things. And so I sort of put those together as a hobby and started this YouTube channel, completed it, mate, about sort of 6 months ago. And Game, the video game store, approached me saying, do you want to make some adverts for us? And they've been really good. They've let us do whatever we want, and they're a bit sort of tongue-in-cheek, and they've been really good sports. So it's just been really fun for me. And I think what it is with YouTubers is that, you know, I'm not George Clooney trying to sell you a coffee machine. I'm just a bloke in one of my rooms in my house, just talking about something that I like. And I think, you know, people are looking for honesty. And it's, you know, my YouTube channel, even though I don't particularly think the content I make is that great, it's fun for me and I enjoy doing it. It's a little bit self-indulgent and it makes me happy. And if other people like it as well, that's a bonus, that's great. You sort of forget how much honesty is important to people. I think that's what people have liked about my channel. It's not slick, it doesn't look particularly good, but they really appreciate the fact that it's just a guy talking about something that he loves, which is video games.
Sally, how does it resonate with you itself?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in what James says. I think it's all about people being able to relate to something or to somebody. I agree with the honesty thing. You know, it's, you know, gone are the days, I think, when people are blown away by swanky adverts and drawn in by it. I think more
George
and more
Clooney
people
works very hard on those coffee commercials.
But I think, you know, people are looking for, they are looking for honesty, and they are looking for something they can relate to. So I agree.
Well, it's unanimous as far as the studio is concerned, James. But if we're looking at the range of deals that are on offer, what's the best way of, you know, going about recommending to your viewers what game is right for them? Because some people might be Call of Duty people, some people actually might be more Assassin's Creed, some people might find them both too scary.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's been brilliant about video games for years and years and years is that you can trade in old games and get new games and things like that. So it's I would always encourage people to, if they like video games, obviously, to try any game, you know, not just the big games like FIFA or Call of Duty. there are some amazing games being made nowadays from smaller independent studios that feel actually very traditional, sort of side-scrolling platformer games. And I'm obviously biased because I love video games and I can talk about it forever and ever, but just try video games because they're so much fun, and don't try them all. Is basically what I'm saying.
That makes sense. I mean, personally, I still feel we should actually go back to the ping pong tennis scenario. That was very exciting in its day. And then Space Invaders, just too adventurous in so many ways. But still, Ben, any further questions or queries you got?
Have you got a favourite game yourself, James?
Probably my favourite game of all time would be Grand Theft Auto Vice City. It's slightly violent, which was something I enjoyed when I was a teenager. I don't know what it is with boys.
I quite like Grand Theft Auto. I don't know. I think it's the freedom as well on the game to be able to do what you want.
Especially with Vice City as well. It's set in the 80s in sort of the state of Florida in this fake city of Vice City, and it looks brilliant. It's palm trees and cool cars and cool clothes, and the music's brilliant. And It's been a game that's stuck with me since I was about sort of 12, 13 years old.
GTA.
I'm still playing it.
Well, you see, you haven't completed it then.
I'm not. No, I'm actually. Thanks for that, because I'm actually in the middle of completing it, and you can check out my progress if you type in "completed it, mate" on YouTube.
Yeah, you see, fabulous. Personally, I think we should actually be working on an in-betweeners application game sort of scenario where you can actually work through that process as well.
Definitely, the perfect circle.
I don't know how that would work. how much of a disaster? How tragic can you turn any sort of social situation? That's how you get points on that game.
I think that would work.
Well,
I
mean, would it beat the 18 rated?
It would have to be. Yeah. I wouldn't expect any less, yeah.
And what's the best place to go to, apart from your own YouTube channel, James, to find out more information or more details? Would it be game.co.uk, perchance?
Well, obviously, because that's what I'm being paid for. Well, that's a beautiful sort of scenario for me to be in, because of my YouTube channel, because I am on the television. It's very flattering. I get lots of people saying to me, can you talk about this on your YouTube channel and we'll give you some money? And 99 out of 100 times I have to say, well, no, because socks have nothing to do with video games or anything like that. And what's been great is that I've managed to build this relationship with Game. And they've just been brilliant. They've really grasped the idea that we want to make these honest adverts and be honest with people and say I'm being paid to do this. Oh. And it's they're really fun. They've been really fun to make. I don't know if you've seen any adverts yet.
Yeah.
But they are sort of silly, and Game have not the client Game. They haven't turned around and said, no, you can't say that, you can do that. And they're happy to sort of, I'm happy to poke fun at myself, and they're happy to sort of be made fun of a little bit as well. So it's been a really nice way to do adverts. Usually you do feel a little bit like, well, I'm just doing this for the money. This has been sort of, really fun for me.
I think, again, though, that having that fun and poking, the fun at yourself in the videos, especially in the TV ads. I think that, again, that sort of reinforces the trust again. People still believe it to be trustworthy, especially if you're being paid, where obviously a lot of YouTubers don't tend to declare it, despite making it quite obvious.
Yeah, I think it's important to say, I've done YouTube videos where I have reviewed stuff, and I've said at the beginning of the episode, oh, by the way, I bought this, I paid for this, this isn't like a freebie that someone has sent me and said, hey, you can get this for free if you talk about it on the YouTube channel. And again, I get asked that all the time, and my thing is always, you can send me as much free stuff as you like. Look, I'm always going to take free video game stuff, but I'm going to be honest if I talk about it on my channel. So it's up to you whether you want to or not. I will always be grateful for free video games, of course.
Expect
but
the worst.
I'm never going to lie on my channel because I don't need to, and then the whole channel, the whole completed it, mate, idea just becomes pointless to me.
And And that is one of the reasons why the ethics of James Buckley are impeccable, and I'm sure in a few years' time it will be a rise Sir James Buckley. There'll be a knighthood in it, I know. moving on, James, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning? Has it been okay for you?
It's been lovely, thank you.
And we haven't paid him to say that, of course.
No, you haven't paid me, although that that introduction was sort of a payment. Oh. I mean, I should probably be paying you.
Oh, should record it. You can record it. I could be your intro in your next video.
I'm going to make it my ringtone.
So can we prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future? Will you return, James?
Yeah, anytime you want.
A round of applause for James Buckley, please.
Yay!
Thanks, guys.
Now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend who is William Sitwell.
Absolutely right. The award-winning William Sitwell, Sally, has to be said. Award-winning.
That was the wrong jingle.
Oh, no. We've got the right jingle coming up very short. Do you want the Greg Wallace one to actually come and...
The one where she has a bit more oomph.
Ah.
And she giggles at the end. There's more power in it. Yeah. That was a bit sort of letdown.
It's the morning after the night before. Or indeed the morning after the second morning after the night before. Before we get into the fantastic... A round of applause.
This is the award winning.
Exactly. Award winning. Brilliant stuff. Sally, you're about to leave us, and I'm sure you'd like to congratulate William as your Questy as representing the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society.
Absolutely. Congratulations, William. Mm.
And the key thing is you're really looking for, obviously, William to come up to the Food and Gift Fair next year.
Yeah, definitely. He needs to be featuring us, I think.
Mm, exactly. That's the message is there.
Food event.
Before we get into William, just finally, how do people actually get tickets on the gate, presumably now, because it'd be too late to actually...
No, advance tickets still available until tomorrow, sort of 5 o'clock time, available through our website, www.lincolnshireshowground.co.uk. £5 in advance, £6 on the gate, under 16s go free, ample free car parking, open to the public at 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And Saturday and Sunday.
We will speak in the next 20 or 30 odd hours. This is the one I think William was looking for.
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend who is William Sitwell.
Is that better, William? Oh, he's dropped the plate.
Yep. That's more like it.
Exactly. So before we talk about your Italian adventure, just share with us, I mean, some of these fantastic results. I mean 2 years ago, obviously, when you picked up the Editor of the Year award, we thought that was great and that was fine. But now it looks as though, with Waitrose Food, you've knocked it out of the park, haven't you?
You're very kind. That one was the BSME, which is the British Society of Magazine Editors, which I hadn't won for a few years. And then Tuesday night was the Content Marketing Awards, and they're a big global award for international brands who produce content. And I last won that in 2004, so it was quite nice to bag that one. And we got Best Use of Photography for Waitrose Food as well, as being runner-up in Designer of the Year and Magazine of the Year. So we have five little gongs. It all, every little helps as our clients,
competitors. You say that's a different line, a different brand entirely. I mean, we can't go down that sort of five store line.
Hello, this is Greg Wallace, and you're listening to William Sitwell on Siren. The man's far too posh.
Ben, you had a query about the spaceship design, I believe.
The rocket ship awards trophy thing you've picked up, William.
Yes.
Yeah.
What is but the design behind it? Do you know at all?
It's a rocket.
As in, is there any particular reason why they've got a rocket on the award?
I ask myself that constantly.
It's completely irrelevant to food, isn't it, really?
It's one of the great questions. Why have I been given a rocket? but I think it's because, you know, all of us, our careers are soaring into different universes.
Nice.
Or, I don't know. I'm sure there's several ridiculous metaphors there, but the CMA, the Content Marketing Association, decided that this year their awards would be signified by a rocket. So
it's a bit bizarre.
Well, it's wonderful. But it has to be said, he would have had Sitwell pride there, because I actually mentioned Dame Edith Sitwell when I was actually orating myself with the poetry of Wilfred Owen at the Rockcliffe Hall Help the Heroes event on Saturday, in which I gave you lots of plugs, William, and said you should purchase this latest copy of Eggs or Anarchy as soon as possible. In fact, William, you'll be pleased to know that now that we've launched the next exciting segment of the Midweek Drive Bake Off, one of the main prizes, will be a signed copy, which I've purchased online, a signed copy of indeed Eggs or Anarchy. Now,
very well done. If you'd bought a hold of me personally, I would have given you a slightly larger discount.
Oh.
But I'm glad you mentioned Wilfred Owen, of course, because he was a poet that my great aunt Edith championed and tragically, died in the trenches.
Well, more
during,
than, well, that, he actually died one week before the armistice was declared. That was the thing that I thought was most upsetting. You know, he did the Battle of the Somme. He came out of the Battle of the Somme, invalided out of that, went back and literally in action a week before the final closure of hostilities, and then he was shot. Still, never mind. It's the poignancy. He was only 25 as well. Never mind. He'd be looking
do you
down.
Mean, what do you mean? What do you mean? Never mind.
Just,
Is that how you kind of cast glance across the slaughter of our innocents? Just never mind.
Sometimes in these Trump-era environments, I feel we have to put a tough love situation on. You know, I was trying to channel the Kitchener spirit there. That was the whole thing. It was the stiff upper lip that was going through.
Very good. I'm glad you're coming round to that funny man who's going to be in the White House.
it's extraordinary. Anyway, Italian and the Italian job. Hang on a minute, lads. I got a great idea. Ben.
William, what would you get up to in Italy? Is there anything interesting?
I did many interesting things. You mentioned Turin. I mean, I was making a little pilot for some television, and I was traveling through Piedmont, and I was in Turin for about 24 hours, which I tell you is the most beautiful city. I just thought it was some boring northern industrial town, but actually it's this incredibly beautiful city that is set between the foot of the Alps, right there in the northern part of Italy in Piedmont. It's got these wonderful long avenues, beautiful squares. It's got one of the greatest Egyptian museums in the world. I've never seen so many sarcophagi, if that's the word, and mummies and ancient Egyptian necklaces and little things like that ever, and that was extraordinary. There's some amazing restaurants. There's probably the greatest chocolate factory that I've ever been in. It's a place called, I think it's Peirano, and it's a factory that's been going since the 1940s. And all of the machinery, all of the equipment was built in the 40s. And it feels very industrial. And you've got these massive, great pipes and just lovely, hot, oozing milk chocolate pouring out of them. We were sort of there with our spoons tucking in. And they produce these exquisite chocolates. And it's just a city of these little hidden treasures, amazing little restaurants hidden on the piano nobile of some of the ancient royal palaces. And then we went out into the countryside and discovered the story behind the Nebbiolo grape, which, of course, is the grape that creates the Nebbiolo wine, Barolo, and so on, depending on how the wine's been looked after. So that was quite interesting. Then we went out hunting for truffles with them, with some sort of pointer, sort of houndy dogs. And it's fascinating. You watch them go out and they sort of scour the landscape and they start digging. The moment they start digging furiously, the trifaloo, the truffle hunter, comes with his little tool and carves very gently around the position where the dog has started to dig. And then as you get closer, this amazing scent fills the air, because the truffle actually is 90% on the nose, 10% on the flavour. And when you start uncovering them under the earth, you can actually smell them. And these are white truffles, which are very unique, very rare. They fetch very high price in the markets and the restaurants. And that was amazing, digging up these little golden nuggets, as it were. And we visited other, you know, restaurants and places. It's a fantastic place. So the next time you feel like a little mini break, head to Turin.
To actually go in 40 minutes from cuffing and Tinder applications through Black Friday with the in-betweeners through to white truffles, I think is pushing for an award in its own way.
It's a unique show, isn't it? Oh, very unique show.
Working through that. But William, last night, as we said, Linda Hewitt officially launched the second Midweek Drive Bake Off. You may recall you actually looked at some of the entrants into the first Midweek Drive Bake Off 2 years ago. It might be a biannual event. But it's in full force now. The closing date will be December the 14th. We may be inviting you to join us telephonically on the evening of that particular event, because it'll be lots of tension. Midweek Drive's off there. They've had suggestions from as far afield as Nashville for giant tower cookies. But William, would you have any tips for a Christmas bake-off in which literally all bets are off? They could produce anything as long as it's a kind of, you know, confectionery-based thing, or even a bread-based thing.
Well, my tip when it comes to baking is not to experiment, to use a recipe in a book that has a good reputation, and do not divert from any of the amounts or the cooking time. This is not a time to riff and try and be clever, because these chemical reactions have to be very, very precise. I was talking to William Curley. He's a Scottish guy, one of our nation's best patissiers and chocolatiers, and he has a book out called Nostalgic something or other.
Genius title. Nostalgic something or other.
Nostalgic something or other. And actually, I was talking to him about this, and he said, yeah, there's no room for error in baking. Mm. But use the recipe. And you can't go wrong. I mean, if you can read, you have an oven, you have the tools, you can't go wrong. But the other thing is, when you're starting to bake, don't be too ambitious. Keep it simple. There's nothing better than a really beautifully made chocolate cake and lovely butter icing. So I think people can exert themselves trying to create things like millefeuille for the first time. Well, they'll end up actually probably cutting that, just setting fire to themselves because they're so frustrated.
Well, as you know, I think we made a kind of history when we had you judge the last bake-off via the telephone and just looking at images of the cakes, so we might sort of have to set up something along those lines as well. Linda Hewitt will be your taste buds in the studio. At least that's what she promises to be. But that's brought us neatly round before we head off to another exciting contributor to those last two questions. Ben, please, to the Editor of the Year.
Hey, congratulations, William, for myself.
Exactly.
Have you enjoyed your attendance at Lupinfest this morning, William? Mixing names up here.
His words effectively meant, has it been an okay experience?
Has it been good?
Yeah. Have I had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with you? I think the answer is yes. That's the question.
He's got it before myself.
Are you in a kitchen at present, by the way?
I am. I'm in my kitchen in Old Street in London, where we test and demo all our recipes.
See, that's what you call an editor who gets down and dirty with the troops.
Exactly.
Not an ivory tower, not in a kind of Citizen Kane kind of William Randolph Hearst, right? No.
And as I speak to you, I'm looking at our deputy food editor, who's called Lucy Battersby, who's known as Dr. Lucy, because she doesn't just cook amazing food, she also can cure any ailment.
Well, there we are, Dr. Lucy. We feel honoured, and who knows, maybe someday we'll feature Dr. Lucy on the programme. Next question.
And will you be joining us again soon?
God help us, possibly.
Myself. of the town we were raised, yeah, cause we were done. I remember we were sleeping in cars, we were searching for ours, we were burning cigars with the white. And most of the days we were searching for ways to get up and get out of the town we were raised, yeah, cause we were done. I remember.
I wonder if they had Tinder in those days. Oh, maybe not. Okay, so what have we done so far? Gibraltar, the joys of fantastic beasts and where to find them, the United Kingdom, Ian Lennox, of course, and feeding his cat, Jessica Corbino with Tinder dating, James Buckley from The Inbetweeners on best games to buy. Honestly, no money exchanging hands at all. William Sitwell, of course, congratulations, Editor of the Year. And now, Ben Sitwell, the time has finally come where we can say a hearty welcome back to the programme for our stains guru extraordinaire, the Doctor Who aficionado, who has called it right so many, many times over the years, the founder of CaldorCity.com, Gloucestershire's very own, Alan Stevens. Welcome back, Alan.
Hello, welcome back.
It's been months since you were last on the programme, but, you know, at the end of the day, oh, happy birthday to Fiona for yesterday, because we see Fiona Moore and Alan Stevens, it's just the team. A reminder, of course...
Yeah, well, I thought Fiona's going to be here today, but unfortunately she's got a doctor's appointment, so she isn't.
It's okay. She's not watching Class in any way, shape or form, because she is Class. Sorry, couldn't resist
it. She could explain why she isn't.
Well, yes. Listen, tonight... On Siren and online, the Stone Tapes with David J. Howe, Sam Stone, Patricia Ash, and Fraser Hines, and Nicholas Briggs.
Voice all right.
Yes, yeah, I know, exactly. It's a special celebratory thing all about the Daleks, together with our Starburst contributor as well. So all sorts of other wonderful things there. So you can catch that, and of course it's going to be available as well. That's a little show plug, kind of precursor to the Rock Train. Ben Lewis from Brighton.
Morning.
Doctor Who really doesn't enter your...
No, it does, yeah.
Does it? Oh.
I used to absolutely love it when I was 10, about 10 or 11.
Right.
So. I was sort of the David Tennant era, that was me. And then a little bit of post David Tennant and Matt Smith, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Peter Capaldi?
I haven't really seen sort of later versions. I mean, I probably would. I'd happily sit down and watch it. It just haven't crossed me to do it yet. I haven't crossed paths.
David J. Howe, Telos Publications' very own David J. Howe, put together a wonderful Doctor Who exhibition online and all sorts of other fundraising things, defined Class as basically Hollyoaks with monsters. What do you make of that kind of slant? I mean, is that the sort of thing which gets your good self, Alan, turning around and saying, but that's like saying Torchwood is just some sort of Russell T. Davies rip-off of Doctor Who in an anagram sense?
I'm not quite sure what Torchwood was, to be honest. I don't know. I mean, I don't actually watch Hollyoaks, so I don't know. I mean, is Hollyoaks good?
Well... These are the critical questions which we can only ask on a rhetorical routine. You can contact us, studio@sirenonline.co.uk or info@southsideradio.com, and let us know if you think Hollyoaks is good, has been good in any way, shape or form.
It's been running a long time, hasn't it? How many years is it? 10 years?
It's over 20 years, I think. It's been churning its wonders out. But let's move on to Class. Have you seen the series? I've managed to work my way through, I think, 4.5 episodes so far of the 6 that are actually in the sequel.
Oh, there's 6 available. I wasn't quite sure how many... And many they were available. I mean, I downloaded one last night because I've been away in Gloucester. I watched one last night and I downloaded one, but I haven't seen the one I downloaded. So I've seen 5 so far.
Well, obviously,
More than you.
Yeah, indeed. Peter Capaldi did make an appearance in the opening show, and we came up with the connection. I thought that the main blonde teacher is very effective. Damn good sort of character there. Alan, it's your part of the programme. What did you make of it? The world needs to know.
Okay, well, who plays the black girl?
Excellent. You're asking me to actually find a cast list for Class now. You'll have
Vivian O'Para.
Yes.
I think, yeah. Plays Tanya Adeola, that's the one, yeah. I think she's very good. I think she's excellent. I'm not keen on any of their cast at all, particularly, I think it's Sophie Hopkins as April McLean. I think she just annoys the hell out of me, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the first 5 episodes. I think the best episode, actually, by a long way, is episode 3, which is Night Visits night visiting, whereas some kind of a tentacle monster comes out and recreates people from people's dead, you know, dead people from their past, who then attempt to get these people to touch them. So that was quite good, actually. I enjoyed that one. But the co-owner of A Lonely Heart was utterly tedious, and the part two of it, which was last night, Bravish Heart. You know, I mean, the effects actually aren't bad on it, but the acting is not great, and the script seems like a first draft to me, you know, and it's, there's a lot of talk about, oh, look, you know, she's sharing the heart with the Shadow King, and I don't give a damn, really. It doesn't engage me on any kind of human level. It just seems like a lot of, you know, sci-fi cliches stuck together in a bag, shaken up, and poured onto the page, and then filmed. So, I can see why Fiona is watching it, and the only reason I'm kind of still watching it is through bloody-mindedness, I think. So, to be fair, it is all written by the same author, some guy called Patrick Ness.
Now, you say some guy called Patrick Ness. Patrick Ness, yeah, is one of the young adult writers who, I have to say, I've got a lot of time for. He did Chaos Walking, the Chaos Walking trilogy. Upcoming Sigourney Weaver movie is a Patrick Ness production. I think he's actually got a good sort of routine. Catherine Kelly, I think, is actually very good as Miss Quill. I think I quite like...
You might fancy her, but I don't mean the character is remotely interesting. I mean, she's got some thing in it. I mean, effectively, she is... a female version of Spike from
Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yes.
You know, the guy who had a device in his head that prevented him from killing humans. In this case, she can't kill the person who is partly in charge of it. But when it started off, and, you know, he's...
That'd
a
be
prince,
Charlie, played by Greg Austin.
Yeah, well, you know, Charlie's a prince from the planet whatever, and yes, they're all dressed like Harry Potter characters in a school. And I thought, God, this is poor, you know. And
is this the Cole Hill School that gave us Sarah Jane Smith and K-9, and before that Ian and Barbara?
No, cause it never gave us Sarah Jane Smith and K-9.
Did it not? I thought that wasn't that Cole Hill School. Oh, I was obviously wrong. Oh, well, then mind.
No, you're thinking of School Reunion. It was a different school.
Thank
one.
You. Yeah.
No, it didn't. It isn't obviously. For instance, it's an academy, not a school. I mean, back in 1963 a school appeared, which Susan went to, and it was basically, you know, a setup, and it appeared on screen for about 7 minutes possibly. Mm-hmm. And then they think, oh, well, we'll go back there.
Exactly.
And really, you think to yourself, is this a good idea? It's a bit like the Christmas special they're doing. In 1968 there was a story called The Mine Robber that featured the carcass, which was, you know, in a very small part, sort of fictional character who is a sort of strongman superhero type character, and then they're kind of building an entire episode around it, and I think it's kind of like, you know, running out of ideas, to be honest. I mean,
no.
Yeah, I can't, well, Doctor Who I think is running out of it. Last year
no.
It was really unwatchable, and I think I think Class, I don't know, I mean, it's an idea, you know, what should we do? Well, we do a teen thing, and it'll be like Buffy, you know, which effectively updates everybody to the age of 845, doesn't it? Because most people over 20 now have never watched it. And we'll have, you know, and we'll have various bits all ripped from Harry Potter, and we'll sort of stick it all together, and hopefully something will work. Well, I don't think it is working, and I'm surprised. I'm surprised they made it, really. I mean, he did have an idea of doing a spin-off series of that Silurian woman, didn't he? In the, you know, sort of lesbian thing.
The Paternoster Club.
Yeah. That might have worked better, I think. This seems a bit half-arsed.
Okay. Well, you've aired your views. Cole Hill School has been a feature of Doctor Who since the first episode, but now we get to see the day-to-day adventures of the students coping with intrusions from space and time. Ben, has it floated your boat? Will you be downloading Class Certificate 15? To check out the 8 episodes that are actually forthcoming.
Well, that's another funny thing about it. I mean, it's you know, it's a lot more violent than Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I mean, there was some violence in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. In fact, they used to cut episodes when they showed them around about 6 in the evening, and then show them again after news night, and there was more violence there. But not to the level you're getting violence in this. And the kind of level you've got, this is kind of like Scanner-style violence. It's kind of 18-style violence, or at least what I would consider 18-style violence, and that seems at odds with you know, the kind of teen drama thing they're doing. You know, I mean, I know they did a Hollyoaks, which was sort of set wasn't it, a sort of after midnight thing where they'd be sort of nudity and stuff like that. So it's a bit like, if it's Hollyoaks, it's that kind of like that kind of venture they did, you know, sort of late night adult Hollyoaks.
Adult Hollyoaks. Hollyoaks after hours.
Yeah, I don't think that was particularly successful. I'm not entirely sure. You know, it's obviously too violent for kids, but it's a bit too childish for adults. It seems to miss, you know. I'm not quite sure who he's aimed at, to be honest. I know who he's meant to be aimed at, but it doesn't appear to be aimed at them, if you see what I'm saying.
Made your point, Alan. Ben.
Is there anything watching, or do you know what the ratings are on it at all?
Would you watch it yourself, Ben?
Yes. I'd probably watch it, but I think I'd kind of have to give it a miss, otherwise it's not really my thing.
How old are you?
20.
Yeah, I really can't say if it's aimed at you at all. It's sort of... I don't know who it's aimed at.
these are the kind of challenges that we face.
Sci-fi people, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, no, because I'm a sci-fi person and I can't stand it, so it can't be aimed at me.
What about the majority?
Well, to be honest, most people, I mean, Fiona was saying that it's not getting any, you know, there's a lot of, when Doctor Who comes on, there's lots of people she has on her face, on my Facebook page, where I go on and on and on and on about it, whether it's crap, whether it's good, and argue about it all the time. And this basically gets, you know, very little coverage at all. They go on Westworld a lot, but they're not really talking about this, and that's kind of a sign that they're not keen on it.
So clearly Westworld thumbs up, going very well as far as the current incarnation of robots, androids and Anthony Hopkins in the Michael Crichton original version of the movie of 1973, but done for TV.
Yeah, I think that's very good.
Yeah. Different sort of, well, who knows, it might be inspired by Battlestar Galactica sort of series of books from Telos, or from indeed, not Telos, sorry, from Your Good Self and Caldor City, possibly published by Telos. So you're looking at the trailer now, Ben, for Class. Is it floating your boat?
I'm kind of a bit lost about the main sort of idea of it, but I still don't think it probably would float my boat.
There you have it. But don't take our word for it, dear listener. There's always an opportunity to check it out yourself. It's an extraordinary sort of scenario. And like yourself, Alan, I'm still not quite sure, because it certainly isn't a children's TV series.
Yeah.
And it's more kind of more graphic sort of illustration scenario there, both with relationships and more, perhaps.
Do you remember a series called Gothic that used to be on Channel 5?
Yes, I do.
Yes. A bit more like that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Good touch. Yeah. We haven't had a chance to actually mention what you're doing as far as a new celebratory Star Trek book is concerned. Would you like to share that with us as well?
Oh, yeah. There's a... I forgot about it, really. There's a book, a chap from Canada.
In Boldly Goes, where no essay collection has gone
Celebrating
50 years of Star Trek with essays on every Kirk-era crew adventure, contributions by Alan Stevens and 116 other writers.
Yes, that's right. So I've forgotten all about it. It was a long time ago since I did it. I quite like the original series of Star Trek. I've probably seen it more than the other ones. They're now doing a book on The Next Generation, and they sent me and asked me to contribute, and I've been watching some Next Generation episodes, and they're not bad, but I just don't feel particularly inspired where I did feel quite inspired about the original series. The one I covered was where What Little Girls Made Of, and I think there was a very interesting
story. You got Sherry Jackson, you got Roger Corby, you got Dr. Corby was never here. You've got a whole range of things there, and keep your mind to yourself. Mind your own damn business, Mr. Spock. I'm sick of your half-breed interference. You hear? And those are just some of the lines that can be used from the whole system.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, again, it's a while ago since I wrote it, but it's basically about prejudice. You know, the guy who is an android, he's actually quite prejudice against androids, and he appears to have gone down there and he suffered quite a traumatic accident anyway. He lost his legs or whatever, and then was reproduced as an android, and then he appears to have basically murdered and reproduced his crew. And I quite like the idea that, you know, the old one, there's only one left, isn't it? It basically produced an army of psychopaths.
He's lurched from the Addams Family.
Yeah,
what's
the
not
biggest,
to
strongest, cleverest one.
Now I remember. Survive. You are disease. You are outside. You bring infection. We could go on, but unfortunately the time is actually against us, which is ironic given we've been talking about a time-travelling programming class in Doctor Who. But, Alan, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today?
Yeah, I just wish it had been on a better subject. That's not Star Trek, by the way. That's Class.
So will you return in the not-too-distant future? I mean, probably before we get to the inevitable Alan Stevens Fiona Moore critique of the Christmas edition of Doctor Who, which, of course, we won't really take until January. Or we might do a sort of special podcast. We probably will do a special podcast about that. Will you be back with us before too long?
Well, really, you should do them at the end of class, shouldn't you? Just in case it you know, yeah. There is, in its favour, I would say that there is, or in its defence, I would say that there is a story arc going through it, and perhaps you shouldn't judge it until you've seen episode 8, you know, so perhaps it's all going to come together and it's going to be brilliant. So perhaps
spoken
time
as a,
or something.
As a true writer, Ben, I know, having met one of the in-betweeners now, James Buckley, hopefully your show has been just a little bit more complete.
It has. It's made my day.
Marvellous. You might be joining us for Sound and Nick's Christmas Vision later on this morning, which we're doing as a special pre-record. Don't forget, later on, the Stone Tapes. You've got a whole heap of other good stuff coming through on Siren, plus the Rock Train. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Jessica Carbino, James Buckley, William Sitwell, and your good self, dear listener, and your good self too, Alan Stevens, for simply being there with your wonderful acerbic comments as ever. Did we ask him a second question, by the way?
I don't think you did.
Will you return, Alan?
That's up to you, mate.
Oh, I think he'd be... Well, mind you, having said that, we gave him a couple of options, and then he sort of had to skip away, and also he was in the Forest of Dean, and all sorts of things.
Well, the plan was, you see, that you would talk... Fiona wanted to speak to you as well, and so I was in the Forest of Dean. You either spoke to me or you spoke to her. So I thought the best thing is to wait until I come back. And, well, the first time you actually asked us, there was some change, wasn't there, or a change of schedule, or whatever. But after that, I was in the Forest of Dean. And then, of course, I said, OK, we'll do it. I got the email yesterday and I said yes, and I spoke to Fiona last night and she said, oh no, I booked a doctor's appointment, so it's a complete waste of time.
Alan, would you like to say bye-bye?
Bye-bye, Alan.